right, I'm joined with Miles Millard again. I'm glad you were willing to return. The first time was so great, so I'm glad to have you again, Miles.
Matt, thanks for having me on. I had a blast last time and looking forward to this one as well.
All right, let's start. I talk so much Lakers these days, and I'm so depressed about it. I just want to move on to stuff that is more interesting. But I want to start with your initial reaction to the Dante Exum injury. Besides the fact that I think collectively we as fans and a lot of people in the NBA feel really bad for him because he's had so many bad injuries, but what were your first kind of thoughts that came to mind when you saw the severity of his most recent injury?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that just like everyone else, I felt obviously terrible for him.
Yep.
Here's someone who just can't catch a break, and he's shown glimpses, right? He'll get healthy for a 3 or 4 month stretch, and he'll be a really key part of the Jazz, and you can see the future that he has. You see him building up, building his skill level, building his confidence. His explosiveness and athleticism is something that, at least in the second unit, this team desperately needs. But so obviously it hurts from that standpoint. And then just it's really Jazz have to make a tough decision now.
Yep. You know,
at what point do you cut bait because you just don't think he can stay healthy? And that's going to be a tough decision because I know they've invested a lot in him.
Hindsight's 20/20. I can't remember if we agreed on this a couple months ago, but my first reaction, Miles, was, man, they missed an opportunity to trade him at the deadline. I know that he was fighting an ankle injury, but man, if I was running the Jazz, and I probably wouldn't do a good job, but I would have included him in a package for Conley. And obviously, as I mentioned, hindsight's 20/20, but Conley's been fantastic since the All-Star break. He said he was willing to play anywhere, and it's who knows? Exum can rebound and still have trade value, but my first reaction was, man, it's too bad they didn't trade him before another devastating injury.
Yeah, I think there's been a couple of times, actually, that the Jazz have had a chance to trade him and haven't because they liked his upside and they liked his potential and considered him a real building block for the future and someone who could contribute for a long time. You know, you don't get too many stars on rookie deals in this league.
No, definitely not.
He was cheap and he had the talent. Yeah, hindsight being what it is, if he was the sticking point in a Conley negotiation, knowing what I know now, boy, that would be a really tough pill to swallow because you look at Conley's skills and it's what the Jazz need right now.
Yes.
You know, just a little bit more scoring out of that point guard play.
Yep.
A little bit more defense, obviously shooting the space, the floor.
Yep.
I've been surprised actually at how much they've sat Rubio.
Totally.
You know, in crunch time and others and let Ingles and Mitchell take turns running the point. But yeah, if Exum was the sticking point in those negotiations, obviously not a great look now knowing what we know.
Yeah, we'll never know, but man, you know, you just – again, we have no idea what was discussed between Memphis and Utah, but obviously there were reports of some discussions, and you just wonder, man, you know, Utah should have done – almost whatever it takes outside of trading a couple key guys like Donovan and Rudy. And like you said, I still believe to this day that Conley would make this team really interesting. He like you said, his skill set is almost exactly what Utah needs. And it's a bummer to have someone like Exum go down with another injury because he was a great trade piece. And now you wonder, what kind of value is he going to have next year, even going forward, assuming he returns to what he was?
Yeah, and the Jazz are in a really interesting position right now, not only with Exum, but just in general, knowing that they're not going to get a crack at big-time free agents. You know, they're not the Lakers. They're not going to have LeBron James knocking on their door. They've tried to build the team and build success through longevity with certain players, longevity with the team, stability within the organization, stability in the coaching staff, and the chemistry in that locker room, I know plays a big part of the success that they have. At least that's what they say or that's what they claim. So it's in a weird position too, where any move they make, you worry that it will impact negatively that chemistry that they have,
yep.
or take something away where even if you get a better player, does the team end up actually playing better? And when that's the case, you can second guess a lot of things, right? And maybe you don't go after talent, and maybe you're nervous to take that next step. But yeah, Conley would have been a great fit. And it, I guess if there is a silver lining with Exum, it's maybe they keep him around and his deal's not as big and he can pan out.
Right.
Right. He's still really young. He's not even 25 yet. I think he's 23.
Wow.
But he's, because he was the 2014 draft. Yeah, he was 18 years old. So yeah, he's going to be 23 or so. And so he's just, you know, maybe now they don't pay him as much. They can keep him around because I think he still has more value to the Jazz right now than he does any other organization.
Totally. This, and I hope I'm wrong when I say this, but this to me looks a little, and again, it's not on the same scale, but this reminds me a little bit of the Lakers and Brandon Ingram, in which if you look at this season, if the Lakers had Paul George instead of Ingram and Randall and Russell, two of those three are already gone because the Lakers let them go for nothing. I guess they did get a couple things for Russell, but Randall left on his own. Anyways, you look back as a Lakers fan now and you're like, my goodness, why did we not trade Brandon Ingram and whoever the heck the Pacers wanted, knowing what we know now? And now, you know, Brandon Ingram has the blood clot and who knows if he's even tradable anymore. And it's, you know, I would hate for a situation like that to happen to Utah, where they could have moved on a couple guys, got cold feet, didn't do it. And then, you know, I think you guys will be a playoff team for a while, but at some point I want Utah to be aggressive and do something and make a move, because I think they have a lot of pieces there to be really interesting. They're just one guy away, and you never know when that window is going to close or something unexpected is going to happen. Like it's happened to the Lakers, to where the start of the year, you think, oh, L.A., they got LeBron, they got young guys, they can do anything. Fast forward 8 months, it's like L.A. is doomed. I mean, it's doom and gloom in L.A., and a lot of that can be pinned to the what ifs of if you had just moved one or two young guys, who knows what it could be.
Yeah, definitely. There's always a tendency to overvalue your own guys because you see them in practice every day. You get to know them. You develop that friendship, the emotional connection with them. And sometimes you don't want to trade. And then looking back, I mean, gosh, can you imagine Lakers fans talking now about Lonzo Ball being a sticking point in any trade? Hey, we've got to keep him, right? And at the beginning of the season, it was like, no, let's build around LeBron and Lonzo. Knowing what you know now, you're like, no, we'll trade for anybody, right? He's available. It's kind of just, again, overvaluing those picks. And the other thing, too, is GMs are put in a tough position that anytime they trade somebody who they drafted or who they brought into the team, it's not a great look for them, right?
No.
Because then it's like, oh, we brought this guy, didn't work out. They have to admit that maybe it wasn't the best decision. And I think for some GMs, that can be pretty tough. Magic, obviously Hall of Famer. No one can doubt his basketball or business chops.
Yeah.
But his track record as a coach and as a GM are
bad.
Spotty.
Spotty is giving him some credit. I am very down on Magic right now. But, yeah, you're right. I mean – yeah, especially you think about Ingram and Exum. Those are the two guys we're talking about. Both of them pick so high. I think you're absolutely right. No one wants to admit, all right, this didn't pan out. We're going to move off of him and do something else. You always want those lottery picks to be at least rotation guys in a perfect world. Because Exum went 5, right?
Yeah, Exum went 5. I mean, the draft wasn't super – I mean, you look at the guys ahead of him, a guy like Joel Embiid.
Yep.
Or, I mean, look, Wiggins and Parker.
No.
The way we thought they would. Aaron Gordon's been hit and miss. You know, Embiid, clear star of the draft. But after him, it's like, yeah, okay. Dante didn't really work out, but, you know, Marcus Smart, Julius Randle, I think Elfrid Payton was in that draft. Zach LaVine, like.
Yep.
I mean, there's some names, but there's not a clear, like, oh, man, if the Jazz would have picked up that guy,
right,
they'd be that much better. You know, I think Marcus Smart would be an interesting fit on this team.
Totally.
On the defensive side.
Yep.
But again, you know, when it comes to shooting, he and Rubio, nobody wants to watch those two in a three-point contest.
No kidding. Absolutely. So right now, I think the Jazz are what, in the seventh spot? Is that right?
Yeah.
Man, that's a great place to be. I don't know how you feel, but I think Utah should just hang tight, assuming Denver remains the two seed. I love that matchup for you guys.
Yeah, I like the Denver matchup. I'm always a little hesitant to play too much into the seeding. I'm a big believer in, you like, you try to win as many games as you can, and then you see where it shakes out.
Yep.
Ultimately, I think that's more beneficial.
Yep.
But as I look up through the standings, there's some teams that I definitely don't want to see. And there's some teams where I kind of like the matchup. And the two spot two is great because if you cannot see Golden State until the Western Conference Finals, potentially.
Yep.
Then it could be pretty good. But yeah, I like the Denver matchup. Denver's obviously really good. Offense has been great. But they haven't been as good lately as they were in the beginning.
No. And you guys have,
and they match up with the Jazz really well.
Yeah. I think you guys have a lot of your guys only have 1 year playoff experience. I think that goes a long way because you had a crazy intense playoff series against Westbrook and George. And then the experience of playing Houston with Harden and Chris Paul. I mean, it's only 1 year experience, but I think that bodes well going up against a team like Denver, who's never been there. Their star player is a hothead. I mean, you know how the playoffs are, Miles. It's crazy. The swings from game to game are crazy. And if you haven't been there and kind of been through the highs and lows, it's hard to navigate those for the first time. And I think Utah would have a huge advantage in that department.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the experience definitely helps. And last year, I saw kind of some glimpses about the Jazz. Haven't always had this, but I think they've got some players who are gamers in a sense that when the playoffs roll around, their game is going to get better.
Yeah.
I mean, Mitchell last year was not afraid of the playoffs at all.
No.
I mean, he tore it up. Gobert can get taken out of games in certain matchups, but he plays really well. Joe Ingles turns it up in the playoffs. As crazy as it sounds, right? The math teacher. He goes nuts. They're not scared of the moment. And it's good to see. I'm really excited to see what they can do this year. But, I mean, look, every year it gets tougher. Like, the franchises in the West care about winning.
Yep.
They're stable. And they're trying to win. And that makes it tough. I mean, any matchup, there's no gimmies there for sure.
So as a Jazz fan, what would be your preferred first round matchup? And then if you were to win that in an upset fashion, who would you like to see in the second round? What do you think the best path is for Utah?
I don't know. This is really tough. I mean, I do think Denver is probably a great first round matchup. Travel's not too bad. I also, oddly enough, like the Portland matchup in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't mind seeing them or the Spurs. I think the Warriors and the Thunder are going to be the two toughest matchups. The Jazz have played the Rockets really well this year. They've kind of retooled some of their offense and defense to get away from that switching defense that Houston beat them with last year. I'd be interested to see them play Houston again. But, you know, careful what you wish for. Jazz could lose to any of these teams.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, I mean, to see him go through Denver, and then I'd probably say, gosh, the 3-6 right now is Houston and Oklahoma City.
Woo!
So,
holy smokes.
Yeah, either one of those is going to be tough. I'm not going to say. I probably say that because of the history, you might be able to sneak up on Houston a little more.
Right.
You might get them. But Harden's so good. I mean, it's going to be tough. Oddly enough, I think the Warriors, they're the best team, right? So yep. I'll speak very carefully. But I would like to see the Jazz match up against them.
Yep.
I think the Jazz are not afraid of them. Doesn't mean they'll win, but I think with their defense and some of the things that the Jazz can do, they might be able to throw the Warriors off a little bit and steal some of those games.
Yeah. Who knows? I mean, I will say this, and I'm curious. You're not the only Jazz fan I've talked to that says, I want to stay away from the Thunder. Why? You just beat them last year. They're not – I mean, they're what, four – I think they have 4 wins in their last 13 games. They don't look like they're entering the playoffs on a high note. Westbrook is in serious technical foul trouble. I kind of feel like maybe Oklahoma would be a nice matchup.
Well, I mean, if there's one thing that Paul George has proven over his career is that he's different in the playoffs.
True.
And not always in a good way.
Right.
And he right now is the straw that's stirring that Oklahoma City drink.
Yep.
I mean, Westbrook has been – I mean, he's still Westbrook and he does things. He's emotional. But he's not who's beat the Jazz this year.
No.
Even close.
Nope.
It's been Paul George primarily who just is having – I mean – an MVP caliber season.
Totally.
I don't think he'll win MVP, but he should be, you know, up there in the voting, probably
yep.
3 or 4.
Yep.
And then Steven Adams matches up well against the Jazz. They've just got some length in some places that give the Jazz trouble. But yeah, oddly enough, none of that is based on Westbrook. But given Georgia's struggles in the playoffs, hey, maybe that is what we want.
Yeah, and I'm beginning to think we don't really need to address this because I think we're past it, the Utah Jazz fan situation. But there definitely is something about Westbrook playing in Utah that gets him riled up, and I don't think it's beneficial to his game. There's some dudes, you know, one that I loved was Kobe. I mean, that guy just relished that kind of stuff. It made him a better player. And for whatever reason, it makes Westbrook crazy. He just becomes – some out of control lunatic when he gets in those environments. And I don't know, if that were a playoff matchup, I would wonder, would he even be able to keep his sanity in check, or would he just go out of control, crazy, jacking up shots, doing crazy stuff? I don't know. I still think that the Jazz, I would pick the Jazz in the Thunder series for a couple reasons, that being one of them.
Yeah. And again, I'm not scared of Westbrook. I mean, personally, obviously, if I met him on the street, yeah, maybe. But as far as basketball goes, you know, he's never really beat the Jazz.
No.
And I'm not worried about him as a player. The storylines around that series would get really tiring really fast.
Yes, it would.
Because, you know, fair or not, Jazz fans' reputation is what it is.
Yep.
And I honestly think it's a little overblown. I think you get some of that in every arena.
Yes.
But at the same time, what happened, you know, at least as alleged right now, is unacceptable. So
yeah,
it's just, but I don't know, the narratives and the playoffs around that kind of thing would get so tiring. I almost just want to avoid it. It has nothing to do with basketball.
Totally. I'm with you. It's already getting a little annoying. I still feel like it's getting a little run on sports radio and TV, and it's like, all right, the Jazz did exactly what they should. I still think Westbrook crossed the line, but you can understand it. It's, yeah, you're right. It would just be 2 weeks nonstop of that kind of stuff, which it's a shame because it takes away from the game. And a Jazz-Thunder matchup would be so interesting on so many levels. It'd be a rematch from last year. Everyone thought, including myself, that Utah beating Oklahoma meant Paul George was on his way to L.A. That didn't happen, and yeah, it'd be interesting. What do you think from a Western Conference standpoint, how do you think it's going to shake out? Do you think Golden State is going to find their way back to the finals?
I mean, they haven't been nearly as good this year in the regular season as they have been, although they still show glimpses of being completely dominant.
Yep.
And so there's a sneaky suspicion that they've got an extra gear.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the history of teams that try to rely on that extra gear too many times, it doesn't always go the way that they want it to.
No.
Right? There were a couple Lakers teams, in fact, that were like, hey, all we need to do is get to the playoffs.
Yep.
And then when the playoffs rolled around, it turns out that they weren't – I don't know if it's they weren't used to playing with the intensity that they needed, or constantly being able to fall back or rely on flipping the switch.
Yep.
And teams caught him and surprised him, and they didn't make it as far as we thought. So I think the Warriors are the favorite, but they're also more vulnerable than they've ever been.
Yeah.
And I think the attitude around the conference has changed towards them, where people are no longer scared of Golden State.
No.
They're like, yeah, bring them on. We'll play them. We'll beat them. You know, whether or not they actually will, I think they're really starting to believe that. They don't have that mystique that they had 2 years ago.
It's going to be interesting. This team, in a lot of ways, reminds me of that Lakers team in 04, where they signed Karl Malone, and DeMarcus Cousins, I think, right now is better than Malone was when the Lakers signed him, but they made a couple splashy moves, and they had a tumultuous season. That was the Kobe Bryant sexual assault case year, and it was just crazy. And then they got in the playoffs, and they actually got to the finals fairly easily. And then you're like, oh, this team just flipped the switch. And then Detroit runs them out of the finals with ease. And so it's hard to say. I think that
it's crazy because no one hates seeing Karl Malone in a Lakers uniform more than me. And trust me, I do. I saw somebody post on Twitter a little while ago, the top four scorers in NBA history, all of them wearing Lakers jerseys, and one of them is Karl Malone. I threw up in my mouth when I saw it. But, you know, if you go back to 04, he was the key to that. If he doesn't get hurt,
yep,
they maybe win that championship. He's always, even when he was old, just absolutely dominated Sheed.
Yep.
I mean, there's no – I don't know. I think that turns out differently if he doesn't get injured.
Totally. 100%.
But maybe not. And I'd love to see him have a ring and just have people give him some recognition and shut up about the fact that he hasn't won any. But
totally.
Yeah, it's just – I mean, this injuries – Boogie Cousins is still Boogie Cousins.
Yep.
He's due for a meltdown at some point. Draymond is still Draymond. He's due for a meltdown. It wouldn't surprise anybody if they got into a fight in a timeout and they're on the same team.
No.
But I thought the interesting, kind of sneaky, interesting subplot of all this is re-signing Andrew Bogut.
Yes.
It's like, what do they see in that locker room? What do they see coming on the court where they feel like they need to bring back a malcontent who is basically retired?
Absolutely. Totally.
I mean, yeah, you've got Boogie Cousins, but then why are you bringing back Bogut? What's that about? I'm not sure, but I think it's something to watch.
Yes, I think it has something to do with, too, the numbers. When you look at that team, when Cousins plays, statistically speaking, they're really not that great. I mean, their offensive numbers specifically when Cousins is not on the floor is as high as any team's ever had in the history of the NBA. Their offensive efficiency is, you know, it's above 120 points per game without Cousins on the floor. When he's on the floor, it's like low 100s, which is middle of the pack NBA. And so I think they might just think, you know, Cousins is great, but we need someone at that center spot who's going to give us what he used to give and what Zaza gave, which is a little unselfishness. Because from the little I've seen of Cousins, it doesn't seem like he's ever bought into the culture, into the style of play. And the only time he's looked good was recently when Durant wasn't there and they just fed him the ball. But that's not going to happen in the playoffs.
No. I mean, the story of Boogie Cousins on the Warriors is the story of Boogie Cousins in the NBA.
Right.
He should be really talented. Well, he is really talented.
Yes.
His team should win a lot of games, but for whatever reason, they don't. And I'd love to see us start. Like with the, you know, there's the advanced metrics and the stat revolution and all this. And, oh, Boogie Cousins, no one's ever been like him. And I think back, it's like, no, we've had tons of players like him.
Totally.
Who seem really great, but just for whatever reason, don't win. And when I say not win, it's not like he lost in the finals.
Right.
Or it's not like he can't get a ring.
Yep.
He can't get his team to the playoffs.
No.
And if he really is as talented as everyone says, like, I don't know. I've been out on Boogie Cousins for a long time. I think the narrative around him needs to change a little bit where it's like, oh, he's so good. And it's like, well, according to what?
Totally.
Like, according to what evidence is he great? I mean, every team that he's left gets better when he goes. So,
you know, You said something.
What is it?
Yeah, you said something that I really don't want to talk about the Lakers that much because it's just it is so doom and gloom. At any moment, I'm worried that my car just might drive off a cliff and that might be the end of things. But what do you make of LeBron not getting this team to the playoffs?
I don't know. I think of like you gotta. It totally reminded me actually of. It reminded me of Kobe Bryant in like some of those Smush Parker years.
Yep.
Where the roster was pretty rough, and Kobe walked in and he says, "Look, I know what it takes to win a championship. I know what it takes to be a great team in this league, mm-hmm. and I'm looking around the locker room and we don't have any of it."
Yeah.
And so what's the, you know, I mean, I think he's at that point where he's by all counts, super intelligent, super smart, knows the game of basketball, one of the greatest players ever with a really strong argument that he is the greatest player ever. It's just when he looks around that locker room, I think he goes, we can't win with this team. I mean, some of his Cleveland rosters were better than this.
Yeah, totally.
It's a tough look right now in Lakerland, and I think he sees it, and he's like, "I've only got a few years left. Why am I going to kill myself to get back to the playoffs so I can get swept in the first round?"
Yeah, totally. I think I bring this up so often, and it makes me so mad that I can't attribute this to the right coach. But when I used to be a Utah Jazz broadcast assistant, I heard one of the coaches say, you know, what's the difference between a playoff team and a non-playoff team? And people are like, oh, it's talent or it's coaching or, you know, and he was like, honestly, it's injuries. Teams that get snake bitten with injuries have a really hard time getting in. And part of me thinks that that has an impact in LA's tumultuous season. There have been a slew of injuries. Every team has them. The Lakers have had probably more than average, but at the same time, you know, there are other teams that over – you think about Indiana. They've had their fair share of injuries. Their best player's done for the year. They're getting in to the playoffs, and they're going to be a top seed. So, I don't know. There's so much to make of this, but I think there is an element of what you said, which is these guys aren't doing it. He probably looks at some of the old guys and respects them for what they've done for the league, but Rondo's no good anymore. McGee can't start at center. They really do have a lot of roster issues.
Yeah. I mean, what year was it when Rondo and LeBron were battling it out in the Eastern Conference Finals?
Yeah, like early.
2008?
Yeah.
Like 11 years ago? It's, you know, it's.
Right.
That's the other thing is when they signed LeBron this summer, I was like, oh, great. Here we go.
Yeah.
And then they started signing, like, they started getting all their other free agent acquisitions. I was like, oh my gosh, are they going to sign anybody under 40?
Yeah, no kidding.
Like, all these guys are my age. And I got to say, it's going to be tough to win with all of this. Yeah, they've got some experience, but at some point you need talent and energy. And I think just the cupboard's bare, right? They've not much hope in the way of draft picks.
It's sad that you even that people even say the cupboard's bare for a team that has lost the most amount of games in the last 7 years, and they drafted second 3 years in a row, and the cupboard's bare. That is insane. Saying that is insane.
Oh, but I will say this too. Nobody feels bad also because is anyone going to be surprised this summer when they land somebody amazing
right.
and their team turns around overnight? You know, they get
yep.
Anthony Davis and Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson and whoever else. I mean, they're still the Lakers. They're still one of the premier franchises that people want to play for. They could turn it around. They've never built through the draft, right?
Yeah.
They've never built their team through some of the conventional ways that a team like Indiana or Utah has to, or San
right.
Antonio.
Yeah.
It's like they built through free agency. They build with banners in the rafters and the glitz and glamour of Hollywood. And they could turn around in a week.
I freaking hope so. I don't know how teams who have been so bad for so long, do it. I mean, even though you, as a Jazz fan, you haven't been a part of a championship team, I think Jazz fans should appreciate the fact that this is a well-run team that is often in the playoff mix, if not in the playoffs. You've only missed the playoffs, like, what, 5 or 6 times in the last 35, 40 years?
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. And I don't want to get too cliche about doing things the right way or whatever, because I think a lot of that's BS. But I'm always proud as a Jazz fan that I know that I have an organization that is focused on winning.
Yep.
And that is always – and they care about the product that they put out to their fans.
Yep.
They take that into consideration when they build a team. They take it into consideration when they're going to blow up a team. Anything like that, the culture is – if you're going to come here, you need to play hard and you need to try to win. And some of the most fun teams that I've seen as a Jazz fan haven't necessarily been some of the most successful. I mean, I think there was one of the Andre Kirilenko teams missed the playoffs by 1 game.
Yep, exactly.
It was actually the year after Stockton and Malone left. I think it was that same 04 season. They missed the playoffs by 1 game. One of the most fun teams to see. They just had nobody's on the roster, but they played hard. They liked each other. They surprised a lot of people. And it was just an easy team to root for. And there's been other teams around the league where I've seen that it's like they've got a bunch of stars and talents, but you're like, I just don't like this team very much.
Yep.
And that team was more fun to cheer for than some of the Carlos Boozer and Darren Williams teams.
Totally. Yep.
Who no doubt had more success, but just, you know, maybe weren't as fun to cheer for.
Absolutely. And that's something as a fan that I've kind of come to appreciate a little more through the down years with the Lakers is winning championships is great. We all want to support teams that win championships, but not quite on the same plane, but close to that is really being invested in players and a team and a staff and even a franchise for that matter, where you love watching them play. Cause the last couple of Laker teams, I mean, I root for them cause I'm a Lakers fan, but I don't enjoy watching them. There's, you know, those kind of teams you mentioned that don't even make the playoffs, you want to watch those games. Like, you spend a lot of time watching those games because the product is fun. And I think Utah has done such a great job of that. And that's where I think the Lakers can learn a little bit from some other teams is landing stars is great and you need stars to win championships. But along the way, there's things that you can do to have a likable team that the fans are invested in.
Yeah, and winning a championship, I mean, yeah, that's still the ultimate goal. And as a Jazz fan, I definitely haven't taken my eyes off of that.
Right.
I can't imagine what it would mean. The Jazz means so much to this community. You live here. You know that. You've seen it. I think a lot more even than some of the bigger market teams that have arguably larger fan bases or more fans. It would mean so much to this community for the Jazz to win a championship. I mean, the day after they win, I've got graves that I need to visit and put up Jazz stuff, right? Like, that's how much it meant to those people and how much it still means. And every team has those fans and things like that. But if there was one sports thing that I wanted to see before I die, it would be the Jazz winning a championship above any other team, any other sport, any other competition. That's my number one. And it's not even close.
Really? Even over BYU winning a national championship in today's day and age?
That would be great. I mean, obviously, I would love that. Don't want to knock that at all. But yeah, for me, it still would be Jazz winning a championship. And surprisingly, it's not particularly close.
Wow. I am kind of stunned by that. Go ahead.
BYU's had success. They won a national championship. And you can say whatever you want about their championship in 84, right?
Yep.
But it's there. They've done it in my lifetime. Granted, I was 5. So it's not like I have clear memories of cheering on the Cougs in 84. But, you know, it's at least a touch point where I can say, yeah. And I've seen a lot of great years and other things.
Right.
And the other thing with the current environment, it's almost just like the championship is just, I mean, it's just off the table.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so it's kind of like, it's not that I've given up on that dream, but it's just different now. The Jazz play in the NBA. They have a chance to win it every year. I mean, they don't, but you know what I mean? In theory, it's available to them if they can win enough games. And so, I don't know. Yeah, for me, that's the biggest one. Jazz were huge. Like, all my formative years were Stockton to Malone.
Yep.
It's just, that's the number one.
Man, that's very interesting. Speaking of BYU, is there anything that interests you from spring football? There hasn't been a lot of stuff put out by BYU, so there's not a lot to know. There's a lot of injuries and young players getting action, but is there anything that sticks out to you from BYU football?
You know what? A couple things stand out, and I think they're all good things. It's been fun to, with some of the interviews, quotes, and some of the other coaching staff perceptions of Mateos, the new O-line coach. He seems like a really fun personality. Something that BYU needs, right? It seems like he brings a little bit of fun, a little bit of swagger.
Yep.
If people still use that word, I don't know. but, you know, he seems like he brings something, and that team can maybe make a leap under his coaching, that unit. And then, look, a lot of stars from last year either gone or injured. The other thing that gets me excited is pictures of Gunnar Romney. I mean, he's looking jacked and like he's ready to catch some footballs. And some decent quotes coming out of camp about, you know, that he's playing pretty well. So it'd be good to have a true number one receiver. So I'm excited to see that. And then the other one is just, I guess, Jaren Hall is doing pretty well, which we know. And I'm not, I don't want to say there's going to be a quarterback controversy, but it's good that in fall camp, I think Zach Wilson will get pushed.
Totally. And then this is something I brought up recently, is BYU, from the quarterback perspective, Miles, we've only had one healthy season this entire decade in terms of a quarterback starting every game of the season, and that was Taysom's sophomore year. So historically speaking, you got to have two guys for sure you trust, and you know, sometimes even a third.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, the Utah State game a few years ago, you know, they were trotting out fourth string. You know, at halftime, they're like, okay, who played quarterback in college or in high school, right? Is there anybody who can throw the ball? So, yeah, that's – you're absolutely right. And that's not unique to BYU, right?
No,
It's kind of the way of football these days is if you don't have a good backup and you're thin at that position, the drop-off's just too great to overcome.
I'm really, you know, in a way, take this with a grain of salt, I'm kind of thankful for the Zach Wilson shoulder surgery because there are so many quarterbacks on this football roster. If he was playing in the spring, he'd be getting a lion's share of the reps. And I think you'd be seeing Hall would probably be the most likely person, but maybe even Critchlow look to transfer. And then before you know it, you have Wilson and maybe one of those two guys. And then after that, you've got walk-ons. So it'd be looking thin, but I think the Zach Wilson injury, you know, is giving Critchlow and Jaren Hall kind of some faith in the program that maybe I will get another shot at this rather than saying, oh, Zach Wilson's the guy. He's going to be here for 3 years. I want to go play. I want to leave. So I think long-term for the health of the program, that shoulder surgery may be a blessing in disguise.
I've thought that exact same thing, right? If Jaren Hall doesn't get a chance to throw this spring, he's either baseball full-time or he's in the transfer portal.
Yep.
And no knock on him, right? I mean, if you believe in your talent and you believe you can get a shot, you've got to get it somewhere.
Totally.
And if history is any predictor of the future, then he'd be wearing a red uniform next fall.
No kidding.
But I mean, he was highly recruited. He was a big time athlete coming out of high school. We forget sometimes with BYU recruits because we don't see him suit up for, you know, 2 or 3 years, but he was a big time get for the Cougars, and to see him throwing and see him doing well, I thought, man, it's so good to get him reps. It's so good to truly build depth at the position. And it's good too, if you bring Zach Wilson, seems like a real competitor. And if he has to compete in fall camp for that starting job, then I think that's going to push him to the next level.
Absolutely. Totally. And then, yeah, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, I want Zach Wilson to be healthy and have a great year, but who, you know, as we mentioned, the odds of that are not in his favor, unfortunately. And so if Jaren Hall can come in and show some things, that would be great. And having a full spring to, even though he's not the starter, he's taking most of the reps. Jeff Grimes said as much today that he's been the best quarterback. He's getting most of the reps because he's earned it. That's a great thing for him to have kind of been the man. He'll be under the spotlight this Saturday for the open scrimmage. And I just think it's a win all around. I mean, Zach Wilson missing spring football, to me, it's not even a big deal because he played so much last year. And then he had all the bowl practices, which is basically another spring practice. So he already got a spring practice post 2018 season. And now to have the opportunity to do that with Jaren Hall, I'm really happy for that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm not worried about his injury at all. Sounds like it was taken care of. Sounds like he's going to be throwing soon.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've never worried or thought it was too terrible. I think he'll be fine in the fall. I think he will be the starter. I think Hall might push him.
Yeah.
But it's tough to overcome that experience, right? It's tough to just throw somebody out there who's never played a college down when you got a quarterback on your roster who's won, you know, that many games and won some big games.
Totally.
And so it's I'm not worried about it at all. I think quarterback sets up well. It's the usual. I mean, D line's looking better. We'll see. Running back, we'll see. You know, it's just.
Sorry about that. I must have pressed the wrong button. So
yeah, no problem.
let's finish with this on a BYU football note. What have you liked from what some of the coaches have said, and what are you hoping for in terms of just an evolution in schemes, maybe offensively, well, specifically offensively, but defensively as well?
So I think I'll start with the defense. I think from the defense, the things coming out from the coaches, you can tell that they want to build that kind of Utah defense. And they've had a lot of talent on the D-line. They've done some good things there. I think they'll be great there. But I'm excited to see the secondary. Corners and safeties right now seem to be as deep as they have been in a long time at BYU.
Yes.
And that's really what enables that defense to work.
Yep.
Right? If they get a couple of guys that can play press coverage against the line, none of the, Bronco Mendenhall, Ben Criddle bailout, you know, line up 12 yards off the line of scrimmage and backpedal.
Totally.
But if they can do that and, you know, start jamming receivers and give the D-line time to find the quarterback, I think you'll see a lot of improvement on the defense in that way. On the offensive side, you know, it's really interesting because last year they ran two offenses. They ran the offense at the beginning of the year that was all ball control and running and things like that with Tanner Mangum. And then when they brought in Zach Wilson, they were throwing the ball. They were passing touchdowns. There was just the offense looked completely different. Now, I know they build it around the town of what they have there, but I really think you'll see more of that wide open style like you saw in the bowl game, where now they can get some receivers open. They can pass the setup, the run, and they have some weapons to be able to do that. So I'm excited about the direction of the offense. I think they'll put up more points than they have in a few seasons. And more importantly, I think they'll put up more points against some of the better teams. Now, it's not going to say they're going to hang 50 on Tennessee, but, you know, hopefully they'll get across the 50-yard line.
Yeah, I've heard a couple coaches mention that the offense is going to be a little more explosive, aggressive, and I think that absolutely is something that needs to happen. And I would take it a step further. I know that there's been a lot of concern about the running back position. If you don't have three running backs and you only have one or two, then We have plenty of tight ends and plenty of receivers to go four wide, throw Bushman into the slot position, or Moroni, who's coming back off an injury. And I really want to see BYU continue the type of offense we saw in the bowl game. And I don't know how much of that was the opponent or if it was just a culmination of all the right things happening at one moment and the offense just exploded. But there's got to be more intermediate and long passing and just an aggressive nature that we didn't see very much last year. And a couple of the coaches have mentioned they want to do that, but I got to see it first. And I'm really hoping that they're being that's going to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. One of the things that I think could be really effective with the new offense and some of the personnel that they have, we haven't seen it as much recently with BYU, but BYU has a pretty strong tradition and history of backs catching the football out of the backfield.
Yes.
And we haven't seen that too much the last couple of years. They've tried, seen a lot of drop balls or quarterbacks who overthrow that wheel route. But there really is potential there, particularly with the tight end weapons. If the offensive line can hold for a little bit and the running back can, you know, chip a defender and get out into some open space, I think that could be really effective for BYU this year.
And maybe a guy who could fit that role, Bo Hodge. You know, I don't know how healthy he is, but he's certainly an athlete. I mean, in high school, he I think had that ability to catch the football as well as throw it and run it. And so, I'm totally with you. If the running game's not there, there's other ways to supplement that, and that's something we didn't do last year. But that's something we got to see this year if we want to have any chance in some of these bigger games.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, schedule's front-loaded again, but like I said last time, I'm a fan. I talk myself into it.
Yes, exactly.
Right? Yep. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. You know, it's not 12-0, but, you know, let's win 8 games. Let's win 9 games, 10 games. I think you got as good a chance to beat Utah as you have in a while. You know, it's just a matter of getting it done.
Oh, man, please let this be the year that it gets done. I can't take it anymore.
Yeah, I think it will, but you know,
we'll save that discussion for a later date. Once we get into fall camp, then we'll really start to break that thing down.
Sounds
hey,
good.
Miles, thanks as always for coming on. I'm rooting for you, Jazz, this playoffs, and we'll definitely do this again.
Hey, thanks. And I'll keep rooting for the Lakers to not do well.
That's it. I'm not rooting for Utah. That was the olive branch.
No. It's but no, I appreciate that. And thanks for having me on. It's been great. I love it. It's a lot of fun. So thanks for inviting
me. Anytime, Miles. Take care and we'll talk to you soon.
You too. Yep, bye-bye. See ya.